Imagine if your entire life up until now was spent in one room. That scenario is the plot of Emma Donoghue's 2010 novel called Room, which she has just adapted for the big screen. The film opens in a limited release tomorrow. It's called Room. It stars Brie Larson as a young woman kidnapped and imprisoned in a shed for 7 years with her five-year-old son, Jack, played by newcomer Jacob Tremblay. The film sparked a lot of attention at the Toronto Film Festival, where it won the People's Choice Award, and it's getting Oscar buzz. And Emma Donoghue joins us from NPR West. Welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you.
Well, and I have to say, when I saw this the other night, for the first part of the film, I'm sitting there going, why would I put myself through this? This is so difficult to watch. And as you see the whole thing, emotionally, I changed completely, and I thought to myself, gosh, I appreciate things that I would not appreciate to the same extent if I hadn't seen this film. It's such an emotional roller coaster.
Wow. Well, I suppose that because the storyline is so strange and unusual, I mean, who has ever grown up in a locked room? I think viewers bring their own storylines to it, you know, and people think a lot about their children, their childhoods, and the way everybody's childhood, even if it's spent somewhere more normal, it's still a kind of a lost country to them. It's still a very small, peculiar world that they have these vivid memories of and that they had to leave sometime.
Why did you want to tell this story?
I had small children and my mind was full of thoughts about parenting and how it, you know, breaks you down and remakes you. But I didn't have a storyline for that. I couldn't just write about, you know, happy author has children. And so when I heard about one of these kidnapping cases, it happened to be the Austrian case of the Fritzl family, I thought that sort of premise would be a great way to put parenting in the spotlight and to really focus on the mother-child bond and kind of test it against everything else, you know? We've had a lot of storylines over the centuries about whether one romantic love, one grand passion can be worth, you know, can be set against the whole world. But I wanted to do the same thing for the love between a parent and a child.
And how better to do that than put them in the same room together and they can't leave?
Which, in a sense, is every small child's fantasy. I mean, they love to be near us, and it's every parent's nightmare. But no, for both parties, really, there are elements of heaven and elements of hell. But above all, what it does is kind of shine, it literally isolates the parent-child bond from everything else and puts it in the spotlight and, tests it.
Well, let's listen to a clip from the film. This is Joy, the mother played by Brie Larson, explaining to her son, Jack, how she got to Room in the first place.
Do you remember how Alice wasn't always in Wonderland?
She fell down, 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 deep in a hole.
Right, well, I wasn't always in Room. I'm like Alice. I was a little girl named Joy.
Nah.
And I lived in a house with my mom and my dad. You would call them Grandma and Grandpa.
What house?
A house. It was in the world. And there was a backyard, and we had a hammock. We would swing in the hammock and we would eat ice cream.
A TV house?
No, Jack, a real house, not TV. Are you even listening to me? When I was a little older, when I was 17, I was walking home from school.
Where was I?
You were still up in heaven. But there was a guy, he pretended that his dog was sick.
What guy?
Old Nick. We call him Old Nick. I don't know what his real name is.
You can hear it there in the clip, but to explain, this kid has never been outside of this tiny room that he lives in with his mother. He has no idea what the outside world is.
And she has never told him either because she doesn't want him to know what he's missing. So she's allowed him to believe that this is the full extent of their world. Their world measures 11 by 11 foot and that outside there's just outer space. But of course, like all the comforting lies we tell children, there comes a time when you have to give them the more real version.
Yeah.
And I suppose in a conversation like the one we just heard, what you can hear is that even though it's a bizarre situation, this is the kind of conversation that we have all had with our kids, you know, and the child always goes off at these random tangents and the child is always confused about how could their parents possibly have had a life before they were born?
Well, how did you get inside that mind, the mind of a little kid?
I cheated. I had one. My son was 4 and a half while I was drafting the book. I tested out, you know, a climactic sequence from the book and the film involving the child being rolled up in a rug. I tried that out with my son, bribing him with a chocolate bar. So, yeah, I put a huge amount of my children into this film. And actually, when I showed it to them the other day, skipping over all the scary scenes, each of them started kind of making choo-choo gestures in the air whenever they recognized a bit that they had inspired.
Huh. So these lines are some of them right from your kids.
Absolutely.
Now, you wrote this book in 2010. The movie just came out. And in between, there was the case that I was thinking of as I was watching this film, the Ariel Castro kidnappings, three women held in a house by their kidnapper rapist. Did that change the way that you approached the film at all?
No, because in a way, I've always tried to find a kind of a much older archetypal pattern in the story. So it's not about the details of a crime. It's about, you know, much older stories like that of Rapunzel, the idea of the walled up girl who gets pregnant and gives birth to the hero child. So I always wanted it to have really long cultural roots. And also I always wanted it to feel, you know, like just an extreme version of how we all grew up. You know, we've all had that moment of going back to a primary school or a childhood home and thinking, has it got shrunk? You know, we there's a weird gap for all of us between our childhood experience and our adult experience and between what a kid knows and what an adult knows. And I think one reason people are responding so strongly to Room, the movie, is that, in fact, it does have these very universal elements.
We're speaking with Emma Donoghue, who is behind the book and the movie Room, which is out this week. And Emma, I'm going to give something away now, so I'll say spoiler alert if anybody doesn't want to hear something that happens later in the film. But they do eventually get out, and you have to portray what happens with the media. And I want to ask you about that because the media do not come across very well in this film at all. They are suffocating. They even blame the mother who was captured, Joy, to a certain extent for not getting her son out earlier.
You know, it's funny. I've only ever had good experiences with the media, but to approach the media as an author and a screenwriter, that's totally different and much more empowered. When you're in the media as a famous victim, I think the effects are utterly bruising. And we either tend to put these famous victims on a pedestal, you know, make them carry that burden of representing all that is good, or else we undermine and knock them down. And when I was researching the book, you know, I wanted information about these kidnapping cases. So I looked at their traces in the media, you know, YouTube interviews. And I was often appalled at the attitude of the journalists to the victims. I mean, just so probing and prying and sneering. So, that TV interview in the film is a mild version compared with some of the real ones I've seen. And of course, I was really aware that whenever you investigate a story like this, you're potentially very voyeuristic. So I think to me, it was really important for this film, just like the book, to not be about the sexual abuse. It's very much an innocent child's eye point of view on things. So we don't allow the psychopathic captor to kind of set the terms. It's really not the story of a kidnapping. It's all about the amazing normality, the everydayness of his victims.
But what about him? What about the kidnapper? Do you see somebody who does this as pure evil? Is he human to you? What?
He's human, but he's part of a long tradition of what Hannah Arendt called the banality of evil. When I was thinking about Old Nick, I didn't focus on sort of sexual psychopathology. I thought of him as, you know, the slave owner who just thinks he owns humans, the wife beater who thinks he owns his family. You know, just that long tradition, the Nazi camp guards who went home to their families at the end of the day. I think what's most chilling about Old Nick as a character is that he genuinely thinks he's a pretty good guy who's given this woman quite a comfortable setup. You know, at one point he says to her, "Who do you think pays the power bills? It's me." So, you know, he's just kind of, you know, traditional smug patriarchy at its worst. You know, he just thinks he owns this woman and this child.
Let's listen to a scene here. This is after Joy and Jack get out, and Jack is there with his grandmother breaking eggs for a cake.
You're really good at that.
I did before in Room.
Did? Wow. What else did you do there?
Lots of stuff. Sometimes I miss it.
Wasn't it awfully small?
Uh-uh. It went every direction, all the way to the end. It never finished. And Ma was always there.
Yeah, I know. She just needs to be on her own for a little while.
What were you trying to say there about people who get out of a situation like this and then have a hard time with life?
I think children in particular have an amazing ability to sort of pragmatically work with what they're given, even if that's, say, a violent parent an incredibly impoverished home life. And the other side of that pragmatism is that, of course, they get fond of what they know. So I remember reading, when I was researching the novel, I remember reading a blog by a woman who had fostered and then adopted a child. And she said the first night she went to get this child to foster him, you know, he clung to his violent parents. He didn't want to go with this nice new foster parent. He wanted what he knew. So kids have that amazing loyalty. And I thought it would be very interesting to explore the mindset of a child who has grown up in this locked room that the world sees as a hellhole, but all he remembers is that he felt safe there with his mother. I mean, children just want our love above all things. And so there's this endless negotiation between what the adult wants and the much simpler, more direct primal needs of the child.
So how would you describe this story, this film, your book? In the end, is it uplifting? Is it dark? What do you think?
It's got a dark background, but I think we lead people towards the light. It's enormously uplifting because really it's the story of a happy childhood, despite everything. And it's the story of the extraordinary heroism of a young woman who takes a situation of complete degradation in which she not just has to have sex with this guy, but she has to play nice. She has to be polite. She has to thank him for the groceries. And she manages to transform this situation through her love for her child so that she has a totally different identity as his ma. And then she manages to, you know, to get out and to survive and cope psychologically, which is a lot more difficult for her than for the child.
Well, Emma Donoghue, author of the novel Room and screenwriter of the film, which opens in a limited release this week. Thank you so much. It was an emotional journey to see it, but I'm so glad that I did.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And you can see a trailer of the film at our website, hereandnow.org.